Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater week by week and show by show. How are you doing today, Andrew?
Well, you know, I've been doing better. My entire family just got executed by a group of revolutionaries.
Just now?
Yeah, it literally just happened. I escaped because some little boy let me out of my house. So,
No, that's bad. You shouldn't do that. What are your plans?
I feel like I'm just going to kind of go to an orphanage, grow up, and forget everything about all of my past. You know, just kind of normal stuff like that. What do you think?
I think that sounds like a great idea.
And then maybe I'll come out and start remembering stuff because of scam artists.
Oh, that's brilliant. We love good comment. Do you think you might fall in love with one of the scam artists?
Maybe. It's kind of a...
Do you feel sexual tension?
Yeah.
Real enemies to lovers kind of thing?
It's also, it's like a situation where I'm not sure if I'm going to be hunted down by a literal corpse or just a government agent. Like, it's one of the two.
Which would be worse? Like, which would you rather standing at the foot of your bed when you wake up in the morning?
That's a tough choice.
Rasputin or a Russian communist government agent?
I mean, I feel like one of them is more likely to get the job done. So we're going to have to go with the corpse.
In case you haven't picked up what we were throwing down this week, we are talking about Anastasia, the musical and the movie. Cue the music.
Heart, don't fail me now. Courage, don't desert me. Don't turn back now that we're here. People always say life is full of choices. No one ever mentions fear or how the world can seem so vast on a journey to the past.
Anastasia is a stage musical written by Terrence McNally with music and lyrics by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, based on the 1997 film Anastasia, directed by Don Bluth. The musical opened on Broadway at the Broadhurst Theater on March 23, 2017, in previews, later officially opening on April 24th, featuring most of the original Hartford principal cast. The production was met with mixed reviews by critics, citing uneven subplots and an overly long running time primary as their primary issues. The show closed on March 31st, 2019, after 808 regular and 34 preview performances. The plot of Anastasia is inspired by the beloved films. Anastasia transports audiences from the twilight of the Russian Empire to the euphoria of Paris in the 1920s, as a brave young woman sets out to discover the mystery of her past. Pursued by the ruthless Soviet officer determined to silence her, Anya enlists the aid of a dashing common and lovable ex-aristocrat. Together, they embark on an epic adventure to help her find her way home and love and family. Okay, so this is one of those very rare times where you've actually seen this show live.
Yeah, I watched it at the Hershey Theater in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I did too. I saw this at the Detroit Fisher Theater a few months before you did. Same cast, same production. I also had seen the movie when I was very young. And then I rewatched it for this.
I have never seen the movie until this. I did watch the movie in preparation.
Fuck, that rotoscope animation's wild, isn't it?
It's pretty good, but there are certain times where their eyes are kind of like wall-eyed is the right term.
Yeah. You know, like how you can stop frames in random Disney films and get a wild image? I bet you could do that a lot more with Anastasia.
You don't even have to stop it. There's like entire scenes. There's this one shot where it's near the end where the guy steals the grandmother's car, and it shows him like driving, and he's looking forward, and his eyes are like looking in opposite directions, and it's like it stays like that for like at least like 8 seconds.
The movie's weird. I also do want to state that this is a patron request from our wonderful patron, Sammy the Most Lopez. Thank you for continuing to be a patron and supporting us, Sammy. If you'd like to join them in supporting us and get to choose what we cover, come join us at Patreon. Add over. But while we're chatting about this, what did you think of the film? I know it's weird to ask you since you watched it after the show, but I am curious, what are your general thoughts on it?
It's interesting. The best part of it is definitely Rasputin, but he's barely in it. Like, he's got some fun scenes, and I love the design of the character where he's, like, falling apart. But he has, like, he literally only has, like, three scenes in total.
And then he shows up at the end, and the end, like, I'd say it's fairly well animated with great backgrounds. That end scene, like the final villain confrontation scene, looks like dog shit.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie in how lopsided it is. Mm-hmm. I can't say it's bad, though. I think that it has some good stuff in it. And the villain song is phenomenal. It's a shame that it's so early in the movie.
I can feel that my powers are slowly returning. Tie my sash and a dash of cologne for that smell. As the pieces fall into place, I'll see her crawl into place. Do svidaniya under your grace. Farewell.
In the dark of the night, terror will strike her.
Terror's the least I can do.
In the dark of the night, evil will brew. Soon she will feel
that her nightmares are real.
In the dark of the night,
it's a really good song, but it's so early in the movie and they never like touch it again. So it's like, dang, I wanted more of that.
I also think the I Want song is probably one of the best animated scenes. The Once Upon a December song, where she's in the ballroom and then the ghosts appear. That scene is incredible. And the music really sums it up. And Liz Calloway's singing voice, who is the singing voice of Anya, is really, really good.
Yeah, it's, there is great stuff in there, but it's kind of like sloppily thrown together, it feels like, in the end, which I still think it's good, though. I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it. I did.
Yeah, I don't think it's aged particularly well. It is a Disney film now because Disney bought Fox, so this is a Disney film, but at the time it was made to kind of compete with the Disney Renaissance that was going on.
And I would say it did a good job because I think a lot of people think that this is a Disney film.
VHS tapes didn't have studio logos the way they do now.
So there's an actual backstory to this that I think is worth mentioning. The like, yeah, real life story.
What do you know about the Romanov?
They all got killed. I'm pretty sure Anastasia included, they all got killed.
Yep. I think Anastasia slightly after everyone else, but yeah.
Yeah.
And were the Romanovs good people?
They weren't good people, no. Killing people, bad. Being monarchist rulers of a country, also bad. So you got an interesting dynamic there. There's a moral conflict. What do you do with the royals?
I guess you have to kill them. I mean, that is kind of, they dive much deeper into that side of it in the stage show than they do in the movie. Which is, yes, the guilt of having to murder people for the good of a community, quote-unquote, good.
Ah, the stage show is great. The bad guy in that is a lot more compelling than Rasputin, who Rasputin just doesn't really seem to have a reason to hate the Romanovs. Like, he's just, he was spited by them or something, and that's really it. Whereas, like, they actually weave the politics into it a bit more in the stage show, which I think makes the villain a lot more compelling.
But it also makes the heroes less compelling.
That's the one thing that I think stands out with Anastasia more than any other like Disney princess type movie. This is like a really political feeling movie. And maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just reading really far into it. But it feels like monarchist propaganda. Like, it literally feels like it. Like, when you're watching it, they're like, remember the magical good old days back when the monarchs ruled everything? Like, do you remember that? Like, that's how they opened the fucking movie.
There was a time, not very long ago, when we lived in an enchanted world of elegant palaces and grand parties.
I mean, it comes with the romanticized ideals of the... So we have Disney, where they romanticize the monarchy in the general sense of aren't princesses pretty? Where this isn't the literal reign of a monarch pretty cool?
And it's also, it's different because this is a real family. Like, this is a real family of monarchs that actually existed in the real world and actually fucked things up pretty bad in World War One and got a lot of people killed for it.
And were famously anti-Semitic. It's kind of like, what if Disney made a Hitler movie where they're like, wasn't the great things pretty good under Hitler's
back
reign?
Back in the magical old days with
the Third Reich.
It's interesting in that sense, where it's like a actually political movie that is disguising itself as a Disney princess movie.
Yeah, I agree, but the Disney princess elements are still there on this fucking monarchist propaganda film.
That doesn't, and I'm not saying this as in this movie cannot be good because
no,
I disagree with the politics. The movie is good. It's just weird.
It still is weird. And let's transfer now to the stage show where they really try to flesh out what communism means to people and what the monarchist like living situation was like.
In the stage show, it's more political intentionally, but it also feels a little more nuanced. And when I say a little, I mean a little. Like, they do sort of show that the monarchs were living it up, like, big time. And there were people that were, like, dying in the streets type shit. Like, freezing to death. But at the same time, they still do the Disney fairy tale, like, weren't princesses magical and fun? And isn't it cool to have a royal family? And then they mix in a healthy dose of, like, 1950s era Red Scare type shit. Like, communism was evil because authoritarian 1984 George Orwell shit.
You've only read one book.
Which, I'm not going to sit here and defend the Soviets necessarily, because was a lot of truth to that. But it's certainly framed in a way where you can tell it was made by Americans who their only source of knowledge on communism was American propaganda about communism.
That being said, this show has issues outside of just that. But let's talk about the good really quick. We had Rasputin, the falling apart corpse in the movie. What do we have as our villain in the stage show?
Our villain is a guy named Gleb, I think, who is he an agent for the KGB? No, he's like a local politician of some sort, isn't he?
I wouldn't even call him a politician. He's just like a government agent, like, that's really gung-ho for the Soviets. Like, he stands up for what he believes in. But he's also kind of nice, hot guy. Like,
yeah, he's like genuinely nice to Anastasia at first, because he doesn't know that it's Anastasia.
And he might have a crush.
He does have a crush. But he's the bad guy, and he chases her to Paris. He wants to stop her from, like, admitting that she's Anastasia is the initial goal. But then when she won't back down from that, the goal is to kill her because you have to finish what you started or some shit.
Well, you, before we recorded this, pitched this dilemma in your own brain where it's like, yeah, she's the main character. But also, if there's a royal left that, like, they'll take over power, they always do. Look at Napoleon.
OK, yes, there's like a real thing. Reactionary movements will latch on to a former power figure. And this happened in Napoleonic France, where Napoleon was exiled but not killed. And then when he came back, he got a lot of people following him, and he literally stormed the government and retook power. So there is a dilemma in that sense, where if a person is claiming that they are the rightful ruler of your country and they're just kind of out there, and they show back up, like, you're going to have a civil war on your hands, you know?
So that's the dilemma that Gleb has in this story. And it's kind of like QAnon thought they were doing with which Kennedy brother was it that they thought was going to come back and reinstate Trump?
Essentially, the storm is, like, the idea of the QAnon, the storm, would be one of these former heads of power comes back and you follow them and retake what's rightfully yours. Anastasia doesn't actually try to do that, thankfully. But that's like the real life political dilemma that Gleb would have, I think, in this situation. Like, Gleb is not just, I want to murder children. It's like a little bit more deep than that.
He's like, I want to honor like the country that I believe I stand for, which is also stupid bullshit, but.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I would agree with him. I just, I can see the actual dilemma, and I think they do an actually very good job of portraying the dilemma as well in the music.
That, I love his scenes, but once again, much like Rasputin, he's not in it enough.
He's really not. They don't show the villains enough. This Rasputin is also a great villain, and he's barely in the movie. And, like, we needed more. Okay, I think the fundamental flaw is the heroes aren't that interesting.
Yeah. They do more in the stage show than they did in the film, to their credit. I mean, they got rid of, like, all the Meg Ryan improv gibberish, like, nonstop talking kind of things. Made Anya much more of a active character and much more confused about her amnesia and all that. But that first act, okay, let me be the negative Nelly here. I went into this show, not really diving into it. I hadn't watched any bootlegs. I listened to the sound or the cast album before. And then I sat down and that first act is rough. That first act drags on.
It's clear that they have a lot planned for the second act and they just needed to fill time to get there. It's sort of a problem with Disney adaptations where there's like there's not enough content to stretch it to this two-act form, except it's the opposite problem as Disney adaptations. Usually in those ones the second act is where they don't have anything to do because there's no more songs or anything, but in this one it feels like they stretched the first act out so that the second act could be good.
Because the second act really, really picks up and is really good and the plot's happening and it's tense and it's all the things that you want a story to be. This is one of those rare musicals that doesn't have second act problems. It has first act problems.
And I think all of it could be solved if they just decided to do a shorter version and just trimmed the first act down and then made the second act, keep the second act the same.
Or just make the first act a little bit more, you could add plot. You don't just need to make it road trip for most of that story.
Yeah, the whole thing is a road trip, and then they get to Paris, and then shit happens.
Like, I don't know, maybe, like, even delay the meeting a little bit longer, really, because we don't set up Anya until she steps into the audition on accident. We could have set her up in her own way, you know, without the other character.
There's, like, a backstory missing that they could have added, which is, you know, how did she lose her memory? Like, what the fuck happened?
Trauma response, I'm willing to accept that one.
Did I talk about we didn't actually talk about how this happened in real life. We almost did, and then we
almost did. Well, tell us what happened in real life.
In real life, the grandmother character in the movie or whatever is real. She was a real person who was actually offering a real reward, I'm pretty sure, for Anastasia coming forward. Like, so all this really happened.
This is a really bad thing for a family movie.
Yes, but I think in real life, it's just, she just got scammed.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately, just scam artists got away with it, and that's it.
But
maybe there's more to the story than I'm remembering, but that's what I remember.
This musical asked the question, what if she did exist and they just covered it up?
Yeah, what if it wasn't a scam? It kind of was, though. It was just a scam. And
yeah, what? That's not cinematic, though. We got to make it emotionally palatable.
I wish that they even left the question a little open ended. Like, what if she really isn't?
They really do make it very clear that she is, like, almost from the get-go.
Yeah, they don't want you to have even a question in your mind that she's actually... But it would have been a little interesting, like, what if she genuinely thought she was, but there was still, like, a question, like, what if she's not?
Well, that's kind of the reason why Act 1's so just non-engaging, because, like, we know for a fact if musical's called Anastasia, it is Anya. If we had just, like, put more doubts...
Yeah. And then maybe in the second act, you can, like, legitimately confirm it. But if the first act was, like, there was more of a question, like, is she? Do we know? Like, what if it's fake? What if it's not real?
Yeah, I wish, I really wish there was more in that first act, because really, I was so bored. Like, after Anya has her One I Want song, and If I Can Learn to Do It, there's not much offered by this show. There's, like, songs where people talk about their connections, My Petersburg, the... guy has a song, the older guy has a song. Like, we do have these, like, character moments, but I'm like, there's nothing going on here.
You know what it's missing? I'm just realizing it now. The first act, like, that whole section of the movie is filled up with Rasputin doing stuff. Rasputin has his song. We introduce Rasputin. He gets his song. Then there's the boat part where he tries to Nightmare on Elm Street 3 him. like, get her to walk off the boat in her dreams.
Yeah. Good quote.
You remember that part, right?
Oh,
he
I remember
pulls
that
the veins
part.
Out and walks him off the
and he
walks
cuts
him off
it,
the building.
He snips it off. Oh, yes,
that's my favorite. That's my favorite kill in the entire series.
That's your favorite Freddy kill?
Yeah, that's my favorite. It's so gross. but he tries to do that to Anya on the boat, which that I don't think there's a there's and then there's the train crash that he causes. Like all this stuff that happens on the way to Paris is all Rasputin fucking with them. And that just doesn't exist in the stage show.
What if Gleb was controlled by Rasputin?
Maybe it just needed more shit where Gleb caused more, like...
He causes Anya to walk off the ship in her dreams.
I don't know. It's hard to replace, because that... And I understand why they didn't want Rasputin to be the bad guy, because it's, like, it's so silly, and there was no reason for it. Like, I still don't understand why Rasputin cared.
What was Rasputin's plot? What was his point?
I guess the idea behind it is he made a deal with some demon or something to kill the whole family, and the demon thought the whole family was dead, but then the demon didn't because Anastasia was alive. But also, the grandmother was still alive the whole time. Like, does she not count?
Tie my sash and a dash of perfume for that smell.
Oh, I love that. That's such a good line.
I the musical needed some more cooking. And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong here. But why don't we compare my opinions to those of the New York Theater Critics? It's time for previews.
It's time for previews. It's time for previews.
All right, Andrew, we got a Ben Brantley here. You want to take a look?
Sure. Ben Brantley. What do we got? Ben Brantley of the New York Times said the amnesiatic title character of Anastasia, who may or may not be the long-lost daughter of the last Russian Tsar, isn't alone in suffering a serious identity crisis. The postcard scenic show that bears her name, which opened on Monday night at the Broadhurst Theater, has its own troubling case of multiple personality disorder.
Great one, Ben Brantley.
What exactly is he trying to say with that?
It's disjointed.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree. There's a lot of subplots. There's a lot of stuff going on. I want to say, though, when I watched this live, I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And really, the final moment with the villain is so dramatic and such a good, like, sell. That it's just, it's phenomenal. And you got to go listen to that song.
Yeah, the Neva Flows, I believe it's called.
Children, their voices. A man makes painful choices. He does what's necessary on you. For Russia, my beauty. What choice but simple duty? We have the past to bury on you.
It's still slash still. The Neva Flows
because gotcha,
it's like
gotcha.
It's a combination of both of his prior songs.
There's also an amazing animation of it on YouTube that really just sells the emotions just as good as on stage. So watch that if you can't afford to see it on stage.
It's so good.
They use the ghost very well in the staging too. Once Upon a December, obviously they do the same thing they did in the movie, but here when the like ghosts of the Romanovs are singing the backup chorus and staring at them watching, so fucking good.
Yeah, very, very good. And I agree, it's a little disjointed and it's a little lopsided in that the second half is just kind of better. But there's good stuff in here. It's worth seeing.
I do want to say, and I know we're not in song sections, but I usually hate the first act or the second act opener because it usually has nothing to do with what we just saw. But I really love Land of Yesterday.
Once I had a palace, here merely a flat. I fled with some diamonds and that was that.
It's very tragic.
Once ladies in waiting, all bending a knee. Now only one lady in waiting, me.
No fanfare,
no sick dances,
and no coaches,
and we sold our brooches.
No afternoon car games with bazaar.
No caviar, but I say we're not dead now.
We're not dead now, we're in France instead now.
Let us not be sad, the night's young and Russians are mad, so let's live in the land of yesterday, live in the grand imperial heyday. Let's live in the land of yesterday, Russia.
Russia.
Like this fun speakeasy number, that song just, like, I was kind of like drifting out, that pulled me right back in. I'm like, all right.
I think it's a genuinely funny song, and it sets up, like, this is like the nuance that I feel like was lacking in the film version, which is like these people that used to like mooch off of the upper crust of Russian society that all moved to Paris, like they're not really good people and they kind of were shitty. Like they didn't really like Russia for anything other than the fact that they were just rich.
I mean, it's nice to be rich, I'm sure, but now you're just slightly poorer, but in Paris.
Yeah, but their land of yesterday is not some actual magical time. It's just, we were rich. Like, remember that? That was sick.
At least we're alive, I guess. But we're both supposed to be on their side and not. Like, what's his name? The Fraser Crane character from the movie, the side helper, the former aristocrat guy. We focus a lot on him and his like love affair and stuff like that, which is strange.
He's kind of a comic relief character, though, and he's also a scam artist, so are we on his side necessarily? I don't know.
That's the point of this. Our main character's an amnesia, like, ridden character that has no history, and the other two are just scam artists that are using her. We don't even have a talking bat, played by Hank Azaria,
who gets a girlfriend at the last second of the movie.
And a sequel movie, Bartok the Magnificent.
We'll talk about that someday.
One day. Bartok the Magnificent. I watched that at the library once. All right. How about we compare our opinions to those of the crazy folks on Letterboxd.com? It's time for the Letterboxd game. 1 star, 5 star. Where I'm going to read Andrew real Letterboxd reviews, and he has to guess whether they are a 1 star or a 5 star just based on the review alone. Are you ready, Andrew?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. I liked it, smiley face.
5 stars.
That is a 1 star.
Bruh.
All right, ready for the next one.
Yeah.
The only true evil was God granting Rasputin a horse cock and expecting him to not abuse powers with that come with it.
Are they talking about real life here? Is that...
I don't know, Andrew.
I did hear Rasputin was well endowed, and he offered his services to the queen very often.
Oh, the king watched from the closet, dressed as Superman.
A Rick and Morty joke? Ooh. Is that allowed? 5 stars. 5 stars.
That was a 1 star.
God damn it.
All right, next one. I think I'm autistic.
5 stars?
That is correct.
Yeah! That has nothing to do with Anastasia.
Maybe it does, Andrew, and we just don't have the brain cells to know it. Next one.
That's true.
The villain was entirely pointless to the story, but on the other hand, In the Dark of the Night is a banger. Do you see the dilemma I'm in?
5 stars, In the Dark of the Night is a fucking banger, and it's the biggest thing missing from the stage show.
I agree, and that is correct. Only watch the Nostalgia Critic review.
My man. 1 star for that.
That was a 5 star.
What? Why did the Nostalgia Critic even review this? Is it bad? It's good, I thought.
I don't know. I don't know, Andrew.
Oh, whatever.
This movie is the definition of bi panic. We all wanted to fuck the Bartok bat.
Yeah. Five stars?
That is correct.
Is bi panic a good thing? Like, I assume that's because you're attracted to too many characters, or?
Yes. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Nicholas II mass murdered Jews. Imagine a Don Bluth movie about Hitler.
This is what I'm saying. Monarchs are not good people. Like, it's not a good thing. I'm not saying that execution is the best solution, but I'm saying we need to think about it.
You hear that, Joe Biden?
1 star. 1 star. They did not enjoy
that
it.
That is a hard yes. And that wraps up reviews. Andrew, you want to go into a mid-show and then talk about some of these songs?
Let's do it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but we've got a shill at you. Today's show is brought to you by the extremely kind donations by our donors at Patreon. We have a lot of cool stuff over at Patreon, including, but not limited to, picking what we talk about on the show, like Sammy the Most Lopez did at her tier. You also get a bunch of podcasts and things you won't get anywhere else, as well as video episodes of the show that are longer than what you get on the true feed. So you're getting the unedited, fun stuff. As well, on Patreon, you get to ask us questions that we answer every week. And this week's question is from Scoot and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. And they asked us, how many chugga chuggas come before choo-choo? Asking for a friend. Andrew?
So my opinion is probably... See, okay, so if chugga chuggas are together, then it's two. So it's chugga, 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 choo, choo. That's my thought. But I have an alternate as well. I think that you can do them in two or four. So you can do chugga, 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 choo, choo, or chugga, 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 choo, choo. And that way, with that one, you do a longer choo, choo.
Okay. And if you're shorthand, I'd say chugga, chugga, choo, choo is good enough for a shorthand.
Well, yeah, that's shorthand, though.
I think it's situational.
I think as long as you're doing groups of four, you're good.
Two to four.
It's certainly not one.
It's not chugga choo choo.
If you hear someone say chugga choo choo, they are insane.
And you should kill them on sight.
Yes.
Andrew said it. Speaking of people that we should kill on sight, Andrew, why don't you read our current patrons list?
Our current patrons list is way too long. So I'm not going to read it today. We're just going on. I'm just kidding. Melissa Goldman, Danielle Renix, Jess the Stampede, Ewan Cassidy, Monica Thoreau, Mina Maniri, Brent Black, Nathaniel Stacey Coombe, Joseph Evans Green, Mary Lou Choquette, John Vanals, Russ Walker, Musical Hell, Kyle Summers, Janae C., Scoot in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, Liz Lim, Allison Stuller, Nothing is Certain Except Beth and Taxes, Thespian, Ren Cullen, Raphael Martinez Salaz, Jessica T., Mitchell Young, Chai Teacup, Katie McDonough, Chris Marcotte, Mimu, Kiji Marie Anastasio, Leela, RJ Nariga, Charlie B., Bjorn Hermans, Erica S., Toriana Frazier, Sammy the Most Lopez, Liana Morton, Haley Blazier, Cinemageddon Reviews, Villainous Miss, Sophina Ali, The Omega Geek, Paige Pearson, Maddie Wargle, Eliza Erdman, Anna Loskatova, Cheska Veray, Sarah Den Blaker, Jamila M. Brown, Evan Ball, Zachary Torres, Gathering Party Before Venturing Forth. I don't know why I keep doing that. Rora Morasso, Mara Forloin, Captain Rodtastic, and Lisa L.
These people give us a little extra financial support that helps us keep the lights on here at Musicals with Cheese. If you would like to join them in supporting us and get tons of fun perks, such as Patreon-only commentaries or episodes a day early or even earlier, come join us over at Patreon. All right, let's get back to the show. So the opening number in both the film and the stage show is A Rumor in St. Petersburg.
My underwear got frozen standing here all week.
Oh, since the revolution, our lives have been so gray.
Thank goodness for the gossip that gets us through the day. Hey, have you heard?
There's a rumor in St. Petersburg.
Have you heard
what they're saying on the street?
And man, this song really does set itself away from the Disney world. Like, it sounds unlike any Disney kind of musical at the time. So I really appreciate it's a proper opening number.
Yeah. It actually sets up the location and what's going on and why things are happening and all of that. And it's kind of like, I mean, it's sort of similar to the Beauty and the Beast one, but it's not as like, there's no I want element to it.
No. I mean, so there kind of is. It's like the world wants to have the world like it was. And, oh, no, not even that. Yeah, you're right.
It's sort of like the number where everyone says bonjour or whatever, except for Belle isn't there. There's no Belle.
We have Dimitri, though, who I guess is okay.
Dimitri's fine. Dimitri's not Anya, though. She's the real hero here.
I mean, you can say that, but she doesn't know who she is or what she's doing. So we should talk about what other things Aaron's and Flattery have done, which I feel like I should have probably done earlier in the show, but now that we're talking about the music, it seems apt.
Sure.
They have done two other things that we've covered on this show, one of them being Ragtime, the other one being Once on This Island.
One of those I sort of like, and the other one I remember actually really liking. So
yeah. So, and this is kind of their first kind of step into the world of film. Other things that aren't quite as loved include Rocky the Musical and Seussical, which are interesting, but I wouldn't call them good. Now, I think the songs in this movie and in the stage show are properly great.
Yes, there's a lot of new songs for the stage show, but everything is good. I remember seeing this and not knowing what the music or anything would sound like and thinking it would just be kind of like a Disney ripoff sound, and that's really it. But it's got a lot to it.
And got a very distinct sound.
I think that it really kind of nails it. I think some of it has sort of a Russian sort of feel to it, though not like exaggerated.
Yeah. I don't love how this is done in the movie, though.
How do you mean?
Most of the movie like is animated for as if the camera was 500 yards away from anyone at any point.
Okay, you're right about that.
So I don't know why they did it this way. It is one of the most baffling aspects of the film.
The characters are a little ugly at times, so maybe they didn't want to be too close.
Maybe. But in the stage, they use that stage to their full advantage and really use it to set up their characters and make them visually distinct from everyone else, like Gleb, Anya, Dimitri, and Fraser Crane.
I remember really liking Fraser Crane. I thought he was funny.
You can't keep calling him that. That was just me calling him by his like TV name.
I don't remember what his name is, though.
I know. It's all good. We should probably know these things, but I refuse. Pretty sure his name's Vlad. Yeah.
I could have guessed that.
Yeah, it's the most Russian name. Once Upon a December is an incredible song.
Dancing bears, painted wings, things I almost remember, and a song someone sings once upon a December.
Literally one of the most stagey songs ever put into a animated film, and works even better on stage than it does in animation, despite it working really well in animation.
This song is very memorable. Mm-hmm. In a way that a lot of these type of songs don't usually, like, it's catchy.
Yeah.
I still have it in my head. And I didn't even watch this recently. I watched the movie version, but like it sticks with you though. And it comes back quite a few times because this is like her music box number.
And it's what ties her to her grandmother, which is important plot, good character work, and visually striking. It's everything you want in one of these songs.
It's literally everything you want in one of these songs, and it just works.
Yeah, but then we also got to give Dimitri his own song, and that's My Petersburg. I know a lot of people really fucking love this song. I'm not a fan.
Getting good at getting by in Petersburg. I've bartered for a blanket, stolen for my bread. To take my chances and use my head. A Russian rat is clever, clever, or he ends up dead. Boils down to. There are some who survive, some who don't. Some give up, some give in. Me, I won't. Black and blue, welcome to my Petersburg. Standing here.
This one is it's not in the movie. This is a stage.
Yeah, this is a stage original, which is fine. But as far as stage originals go, they can't compete to anything like we have with Gleb. Let's think about
The Neva Flows and Still are both really good songs. They just nailed it with this Gleb character.
Yeah. like I don't want to talk about Still and The Neva Flows individually. I want to talk about the reprise where everything comes to a head at the end, which is incredible.
It's so fucking good. I remember when I was watching it live, I was like, holy shit. I didn't expect like an actual real big dramatic moment like this. Like, wow.
And he kind of seems like a little bit of a wimpy boy up to that point, but then he just pulls a gun on her.
Well, that's kind of the idea, is like his dad like was one of the executioners and he did all this. And Gleb feels like he's weak because he couldn't bring himself to kill Anya when he had a chance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now he has another chance and he's going to be the big man. But I want to say at the end, he realizes that murdering people doesn't make you a big person.
I mean, thank God. But I find it fascinating that in the end, they're both trying to honor their parents, which is at least some kind of theme, and tying together our villain and our enemy, quote unquote, to try to give them both the same equal opposite.
It's more than you get with Rasputin.
Yeah, what does Rasputin's final scene look like, Andrew?
She steps on his necklace.
Oh, real Princess and the Frog ending, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that movie.
In the Dark of the Night is a banger, but that's about it. Like, Rasputin doesn't have to bring anything to the fucking table.
They had Christopher Lloyd and they wasted him.
It's a shame.
The one scene that I really like, and I think they do very well stage-wise, is Quartet at the Ballet, where you have them all discovering each other at the ballet and the ballet is still going on. It's a really clever scene and really, really done well in a song.
Can this be the evening? Can this be the place? Am I only dreaming, looking at her face? Everything I wanted, suddenly so clear. My past and my future so near.
It's interesting how they turned this into a real scene as well, because in the movie it's literally just like the ballet scene takes like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And here they like make it like a real like thing.
They make it tense because Gleb's there, everyone's there at the ballet.
Yeah, it's like an actual like real moment that they pulled out of nothing.
I think a lot of this lays on the back of the late book writer Terrence McNally, which I believe this is the last thing he worked on. He is one of the most prolific playwrights ever. And I was surprised when they got him for like a B+ like Disney musical adaptation, you know? And he does bring a lot to the book. I just wish that first act wasn't, you know, what it was.
I think he was trying. It's just there wasn't much to work with in that first act.
You're right. On the other side of this, I do want to talk about what other things Terrence McNally did, just so you can realize what a departure this was from everything else.
Sure. What else was on his...
He did the Catch Me If You Can musical, The Visit, The Full Monty, Ragtime, Kiss of the Spider Woman, like all of those very political-leaning musicals.
I mean, is this actually a departure, though?
I guess they brought him in to make it more political.
I think he succeeded as well. I mean, The stage show is more willing to acknowledge its political leanings than the movie is. Like, you know, it actually makes the villain essentially an opposing political faction, mm-hmm. rather than just a corpse of a... Is Rasputin the most slandered man of all time? Like,
I guess... I mean, he's got a pretty badass song about him.
You gotta feel a little bad for him. Like,
he's dead.
As far as we know,
he can't be sad about it.
He didn't do any of this shit that people say he did. I don't know.
You can't prove that he didn't do the shit that we said he did.
Didn't he? He got assassinated, too.
Like, the thing is, they thought he was magic because when they assassinated him, he did come back to life, allegedly.
It's not even that he came back. I think that he survived more than they thought he would.
Yeah.
But he still died.
He was only mostly dead, not all dead.
Yeah.
I guess. I think it's a good one to end on. I really like The Land of Yesterday, which is a song that is written just for the movie, or just for the stage show. Really, really engaging. Makes you like these characters you've never seen before, and I have to imagine it's a song to give the other actors a little bit of a break, because they're on stage for the entire time, and it gives the ensemble some work to do, you know?
Yeah, I actually really liked this one as well. I remember thinking it was a very fun, just a fun number. And also, Gleb comes and does a reprise of it and makes fun of them and is like, this is how you fuckers live.
Once they were in power, we showed them the door. Now look at them putting on airs once more. So pathetic, still flaunting his medals, still clutching her fur, still clinging to remnants of who they were.
Shows a good representation of both sides of a debate.
Yeah, it's an actual thing.
Of two horrible, horrible ideal outcomes. Because we got the shitty idea of the monarchs, and then we have the shitty ideas of communist Soviet Russia.
I think we should maybe briefly talk about Journey to the Past, because that's kind of what they use in their marketing and everything.
Yeah. This is the act one closer in this. It comes much earlier in the movie. They frame it as like a proper I Want song in the movie, but they know this is their Let It Go, so they have to push it to the end of Act One.
Which, ironically, I don't think this is their Let It Go. I think Once Upon a December is their Let It Go.
Yeah, but this is the I Want song. This is what that was its job in the movie. And they wrote a new I Want song that I remember less. So
true. I think it's In My Dreams or something like that.
Yeah. And that's fine. But this works. And it finally makes Anya an active protagonist as opposed to like, I'm being dragged around and I'm going to watch things happen. But sadly, it's halfway through the story.
I like the song, though. I think it works, but it sort of sets up the fact that Act Two is just going to be better than Act One, because they finally give Anya like a reason to care by the end of Act One. And then we go into Act Two and it's like, oh, shit, stuff actually matters now.
Shit's wild. I like the song. It's really good and it makes you really engaged. But it would have worked earlier, better, probably. Like, it feels like she's rejecting the call for most of Act One.
Yes. It does feel like we're, like, stuck at the beginning of the story up until the end of Act One.
Yeah, and then we have to fast forward through the rest of it.
Yeah.
On that note, Andrew, what is your overall thoughts on Anastasia the Musical and your cheese rating?
So, I think that it's good. I think the movie is sort of it's like comparable to some of the Disney Renaissance stuff, but it's not quite at that level. Like, I don't think it's as good as like Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast especially, but it certainly has a lot of charm to it. So it's still fun, like a fun thing to watch. But the stage show, I think, improves on it a lot. And other than some pacing issues, there's a lot of great stuff in there. And I would recommend it. I'd recommend listening to the cast recording, especially of some of the newer songs that they have. Can't recommend the villain songs enough. Still in the Neva flows, both phenomenal. And for a cheese rating, I'm going to give it Sovietsky cheese, which is a Russian cheese that looks like Sovietsky. So there you go.
That's fine. I think that's a really, really good choice. I agree with you but I still think the show needs some work. I'm excited to see a lot of like local licensed productions. I feel like it'll really sing in local theater as opposed to like everything else. Like, I feel like the show's too small for the big theaters in a weird way. Like, it's so interpersonal, I think I'd prefer it in a black box. But that being said, I am giving this Ostensky cheese. Soft cheeses from the Caucasus, such as Balarsky and Ostensky, are mass-produced. It's made from sheep's, cows, or whole milk. And according to the recipe, they infused pieces of salted cow stomach to freshen the warm milk. But don't let that put you off, because it just seems a little mean to put pieces of a cow stomach in their cheese. That is the most Russian thing I could think of. And on that note, save Ukraine.
Yeah, I'm surprised we made it this far without mentioning that, but Russia's up to some bullshit. Fuck them. I do want the Russians to lose. Vladimir Putin is a asshole who can suck my balls.
Can we quote you on that?
You can. Put that on the poster.
Vladimir Putin can suck my balls. On that note, you know who else can suck my balls?
Our patrons?
Our wonderful patrons! Thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher at Musicals with Cheese. We're on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals, Patreon Musicals with Cheese, Instagram Musicals with Cheese, YouTube page Musicals with Cheese. We've got a patron-only podcast called Patreon with Cheese. Email us at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our keeper of the cheese is Julian Antonio. This is huge. Eva flows. This show is edited by the incredible Andrew DeWolf. Our theme songs were created by Robin Nash of IOU Music UK. Thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network for having us on the platform. All right, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this on up?
Down with the monarchs, but don't do murder.
The children, their voices, a man makes painful choices. He does what's necessary on ya. For Russia, my beauty, what choice is simple duty? We have a past to bury on ya.
The guy in the touring production did such a fucking great job with that song.
Yeah, he did.
Like, he was so good.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.